Chapter 26, Myths and Realities of Mineral Resources, from Walter Youngquist's book, Geodestinies. Although minerals, including energy minerals, are fundamental to our existence, the facts about these resources and the industries that produce them are subject to many myths and much misinformation. This is unfortunate because it clouds the ability of individuals to make intelligent choices. Some of the distortions are made deliberately by political interests who play upon the fears and hopes of the electorate, casting themselves in the role of the defender of the public interest against the oil or mineral producers. During election campaigns, politicians speak in ways to keep people happy. In recent years, they have been saying how alternative fuels can easily replace oil. Realities and political speak are often far apart. Some statements are made from ignorance, and some are made by people who have their own political, economic, or social agenda they wish to perpetrate upon the public. Some are made by people who are overenthusiastic about a particular resource and do not carefully examine the hard facts, or may not be aware of them. Some statements are made by promoters wanting to raise money for a particular resource development, whether that program has a sound economic basis or not. Whatever the sources, myths and extravagant statements about earth resources abound because earth resources are vital to our survival, and good news sells. Reality may not. Facts must be separated from fiction if democracy is to be the form of government that guides international, national, and personal affairs. The tax structure, which is a political matter, has much to do with the success or failure of many mineral ventures. It is important for public policy that basic geologic, economic, and technical facts be known about a given resource, so that there are no illusions by government leaders or citizens about how important that resource is now or maybe in the future. There are numerous glowing statements in print about what can be expected from shale oil to mining the moon. It is indeed nothing short of amazing what claims are made and what people may believe. This also applies to solutions to resource-based problems such as population pressure, where colonizing space has been suggested. Several of these myths are discussed here. In part, this is a summary of statements made and data presented previously. However, for the sake of emphasis, I am assembling the facts here for convenience and analysis. My good friend, the late Garrett Hardin, inscribed a copy for me of his last book, The Ostrich Factor, Our Population Myopia, writing in it, quote, "For Walt, premier critic of unsupported optimism," unquote. Garrett Hardin's comment is correct, and we were very good friends, and he knew me well. I miss his friendship and the intellectual and common sense stimulus he brought to all of our conversations and in his writings with such epic studies as Living Within Limits. Over the years, I have seen so many statements made that proved to be false, fanciful illusions or myths, that I started a collection of them. The file is now extensive. I have extracted a few representative items from it. The lesson is to read beyond the headline and apply your own good sense about how valid a statement may be. Simple mathematics is frequently helpful. We are witnessing rising public concern about energy and oil supplies in particular. It is a sensitivity brought on by what is known as pain at the pump. Fuel prices are often going up. Increasingly, there are solutions, especially during political campaigns, put forth for what new technology can do. The statement, "We will become energy independent," has been used in every presidential campaign since 1976. Political optimism. Check these out. Basing his energy plan for the U.S. on a mixture of solar, wind, and biofuel sources to make us independent of foreign oil, in his third presidential debate, candidate Barack Obama said, quote, "I think that in 10 years we can reduce our dependence so that we no longer have to import oil from the Middle East or Venezuela. I think that's a realistic time frame," unquote. In 2009, Al Gore declared that we can produce, quote, 100% of electricity from renewable and truly clean carbon-free sources within 10 years, unquote. When the time arrives, check out these predictions as to whether they are myth or accomplished reality. Myth: just drill deeper for more oil. Reality: sometimes the statement is made that deeper drilling would find more oil. Oil occurs in sedimentary rocks, which are a fairly thin part of the Earth's crust. In the oil-producing state of Kansas, for example, granite or something else besides sedimentary rock exists everywhere at depths of 15,000 feet or less. All over the world, non-petroliferous rocks are encountered at some depth below which there is no oil. Where there is a great thickness of sedimentary rocks, 16,000 feet is, with a very few exceptions, the limit of oil occurrence. There are exceptions in the Gulf of Mexico and in the Santos and Campos basins offshore Brazil, where a thick salt bed has altered the Earth's heat flow and oil still extends a few thousand feet deeper. Below that depth, because of increased temperature, only gas exists. The myth persists that oil is not of organic origin. A letter to the editor in GeoTimes, December 2002, says, quote, that petroleum cannot have formed from dead plants and animals and must come up from deep sources in the mantle more than 100 kilometers, unquote. The writer goes on to say that when oil companies hit basement rock, which is commonly granite or metamorphic rock, they should just keep drilling instead of stopping as they do now. This reflects a theory proposed by the late professor of astronomy, Thomas Gold, of Cornell University. He wrote, quote, oil is formed deep in the earth by inorganic processes, and this goop continually oozes to the surface and therefore is in virtually inexhaustible supply, unquote. At a depth of 100 kilometers, 62 miles, the temperature would be at least 900 degrees Celsius, that's 1652 degrees Fahrenheit or more. At that temperature, oil could not possibly exist. For a comprehensive statement on the organic origin of oil, consult the 743-page volume by geochemist John Hunt, 1996, who writes, quote, the overwhelming geochemical and geological evidence from both sediment and petroleum studies of the past few decades clearly shows that most petroleum originated from organic matter buried within the sediments of sedimentary basins. Although a few hydrocarbons in the crust may derive from inorganic sources, the quantities are negligible compared with those from organic sources, unquote. If Gold's theory were correct, oil would be oozing through the cracks in the granite rocks of my native Minnesota. To my knowledge, this is not happening. Myth: oil companies have capped producing wells to keep the price of oil high. Reality: this is one of the oldest and most persistent myths about the oil industry. The idea is that oil companies will drill wells and then cap them to withhold production from the market until the price of oil goes up. It is true that some wells are drilled and then capped. Almost all of them are capped because they are dry holes, that is, failures. Less than 1 in 11 exploration wells are successful. U.S. law requires that failed wells be filled with cement at key points to avoid groundwater contamination and then kept. To the landowner who had great hopes for a well drilled on his property, a face-saving statement to the neighbors is, they found oil but just capped the well. Only when the oil company abandons the lease does reality arrive. Some wells that could produce oil are capped temporarily. There are two common reasons. One is that no facility exists for transporting the oil from the well at the moment. Either a pipeline does not exist, or the well is too remote and the oil is too expensive to truck out. Generally, if the well is a producing one, other wells will be drilled in the area to create enough recoverable oil volume to justify developing a transport system to bring the oil out economically. Occasionally, a well may be drilled, completed, and capped when the price of oil is not high enough to pay for the expense of producing the oil, including pumping costs and perhaps disposing the salt water, that may be produced with the oil. However, capping a well and leaving it for a time is a risky venture, because sometimes the well cannot be restored to production. Drilling a well is so costly that if it is productive and capable of bringing a return on investment, the oil will be extracted. If $1 million is involved in exploration, lease, and drilling costs, and $1 million is much less than many wells cost, some cost over $100 million, then the cost of that money and lost interest the money would earn otherwise demands that the well be produced. No one can afford to tie up $1 million or many millions with no return, and it does not happen. Myth. Don't drill this prospective field. There is only 90 days of U.S. oil supply there. Reality. One of the most misleading arguments used against drilling a particular field is the assertion that it would only supply X number of days or months of U.S. oil demand. To the average citizen, this is one of the most logical, quote-unquote, reasons for not allowing drilling in a particular area. So it is one of the most widely and effectively used arguments against oil drilling. It props up frequently in newspaper editorials, letters to the editor, and at public hearings. During the long-running debate about opening 1% or less of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska for oil exploration in 1995, the president of a prestigious environmental organization said, quote, "There may be at best only 90 days of supply of oil for the U.S. There can be no justification to develop the Arctic Refuge," unquote. Let us pursue this argument. At the present time, the U.S. uses about 20 to 21 million barrels of oil a day. A 100 million barrel oil field is regarded in the petroleum industry as a giant. They have been discovered only infrequently. If one of these giant oil fields could be used to supply all U.S. oil demand, it would last theoretically about 5 days. Why drill it? To put this in further perspective, at the present time, only 15 oil fields in the United States have produced as much as 1 billion barrels of oil. This is, of course, over a period of many years. But if we apply the argument that the oil field would only supply oil for a given length of time in the U.S., it should be noted that 1 billion barrels from one of these 15 fields would have only supplied the U.S. for about 49 days at its current rate of consumption of about 7.5 billion barrels a year. If that argument used by the president of the environmental organization were to be followed, there would be no oil drilling at all in the United States. These days, a 10 million barrel oil field discovery is an important event in U.S. oil exploration. But that amount would last the U.S. about 12 hours. The fact is, we are not discovering 10 million barrel oil fields every 12 hours in the U.S. Prudhoe Bay, the largest oil field ever discovered in North America, would last the U.S. for less than 2 years if it alone was used to supply all our needs. So presumably, Prudhoe Bay should not have been drilled. But it has been producing oil for the last 30 years and has saved the United States billions of dollars for oil that did not have to be imported. Of course, it is not possible to produce all the oil in Prudhoe Bay or any other field in 90 days or 6 months or 2 years. The oil is produced over many years and from many fields and wells that add up to total U.S. production. Production is now about 5.7 million barrels a day from about 530,000 wells that translate to an average of slightly less than 11 barrels a day per well. Each well and field makes a contribution, and each new discovery serves to stretch out domestic supplies a little longer. Individually, most fields, with the notable exception of the huge Prudhoe Bay field, produce only a small amount of oil relative to total U.S. production, but collectively, they are all important. Myth. So-called big oil controls world oil supplies and the price of oil. Reality. Big oil of the past is now a myth. 90% of the world's oil today is controlled by the national oil companies, such as Saudi Aramco. The price of oil can be controlled to some degree by OPEC, but the law of supply and demand is the basic cause of crude oil and gasoline price changes. When the margin between supply and demand is small, price swings become larger, as each increment either way is felt almost immediately in the oil market and reflected in the price. Myth. Demand is the same as supply. Reality. World demand for oil is expected to total almost 118 million barrels per day by 2025. That's from the EIA, the Energy Information Administration, in 2004. There are frequent projections of future world oil demand. The myth is that the implication that demand can or will be met by supply. The demand may be there, but the supply is questionable. Demand does not necessarily equate to supply. To have supply meet the projected 118 million barrels a day demand in 2025, it would have to discover the following facts. World oil discovery peaked in 1965. More than half the oil-producing countries have passed their peak in production. The average barrel of oil produced today was discovered before 1973. Most oil companies are not replacing their production each year with new discoveries. These facts would have to be reversed, and production, or extraction, not only maintained at today's level of 85 million barrels a day, but an additional 33 million barrels a day production would have to be added. It is exceedingly unlikely that this can ever be done. One wonders what circumstances the people making this 118 million barrels a day projection see occurring to make the prediction possible. I know of no geologists significantly involved in oil exploration who hold this view. Quite contrary views are held by Campbell and Lehrer, 1998, Duncan and Youngquist, 1999, Defries, 2001, Campbell, 2004, Bakatari, 2004, and others. Myth. We find more oil worldwide annually than we produce. Reality. An article in the February 5th, 2012 issue of Bloomberg Businessweek states that we are finding 1.6 barrels of oil for every barrel we are producing. Fact. We are now producing about 30 billion barrels of oil a year. To find 1.6 barrels for each barrel produced would mean that we are finding 48 billion barrels of oil a year. We are far from doing that. The last big discovery in North America was Prudhoe Bay in 1967, with estimated reserves of 12 billion barrels. To find 48 billion barrels a year means we would have to find four Prudhoe Bay fields in the world every year. Recent large discoveries of oil offshore Brazil in the combined Campos and Santos basins are estimated to be about 16 billion barrels. The article also says that the oil sands in Alberta, quote, alone contain 1.7 trillion barrels of oil. That is equal to roughly a half century's supply at current global use, unquote. Fact. The estimate of 1.7 trillion barrels of oil is oil in place resources, not economically recoverable oil reserves, which the Alberta government estimates at 174 billion barrels, about one-tenth the oil in place. Myth. They own the oil companies. Reality. To win popular favor, many politicians, frequently joined by the media, assert that oil companies are vague and distant entities owned by them. But who does own the oil companies? During the 1979 oil crisis, I was asked to address a luncheon meeting of the Oregon State Employees Association in the state capitol. The topic was the oil crisis. The oil industry was being widely blamed. I asked who among the state employees owned any oil company stock. Not a hand was raised. However, just prior to the meeting, I had been in the office where they administered the state employees' pension plans. I had examined the holdings of the fund and discovered that the largest single industry holding in terms of dollar value was oil company securities. The fact was that everyone in the room owned oil company stock. The conventional myth is that large oil companies are owned by some vague alien group distinct from the general public. The reality is that they are us. And this is very broadly true. Insurance and investment companies invest their funds, the funds of their clients, in a variety of investments, among which are oil companies. Through life insurance and other insurance policies, pension plans, annuities, and mutual funds, the major oil companies, as well as the mining companies, are owned by the general public. A recent study of the ownership of stock in the six largest oil companies in the United States disclosed the following. Nearly 200 mutual insurance companies hold close to 16 million shares. 91 colleges and universities own the stocks, and about 1,000 charities and educational foundations in the United States are owners of these oil company securities. In direct ownership, more than 2.3 million Americans hold stock in these six companies. Many other Americans own interests in smaller oil companies that are becoming the main onshore oil producers in the United States because the big companies operate mostly offshore the U.S. or abroad. Myth: large oil companies are the problem. Reality: it is true that worldwide oil production is becoming a bigger and bigger business. The reason is that easy-to-find shallow oil has been found. Now, significant discoveries have to be searched for in remote frontier areas, Arctic or jungle, or sought in deep water offshore areas that involve very expensive exploration programs. Costly leases must be negotiated with foreign governments, and if the area of interest is offshore, huge drilling platforms, which may cost up to several billion dollars, have to be built. Oil exploration is being conducted in the frequently violently stormy North Sea, in hurricane regions such as the Gulf of Mexico, and at the lower end of Iceberg Alley off the coast of Newfoundland. These are expensive areas in which to operate. Small companies do not have the resources to pursue large, expensive, long-term oil projects. Myth: oil companies own oil. Reality: in many countries, including Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, Kuwait, Iran, Iraq, Peru, and Mexico, oil was originally discovered and developed by foreign companies with the expertise and capital that the country itself did not have. Subsequently, with the rising tide of nationalism following the colonial period, oil company properties, oil fields, pipelines, and shipping facilities were nationalized and taken over by the respective governments, at times with little or no compensation. Most of the oil in foreign countries, 90%, is owned by their foreign governments, not independent oil companies. Only about 10% of the world's oil is owned by private investor-owned companies. Oil companies simply hold leases to develop oil deposits. The companies are allowed to search for and produce what commercial oil may be found. Sometimes the oil companies are allowed to sell it themselves and pay a royalty fee to the government. Sometimes they have to market it through foreign state-owned companies. They never really own the oil in the ground. They only have the right to extract it. This is an important point, because it means that U.S. companies or any other companies operating in a foreign country do not own an assured resource base. The United States is unusual in that mineral rights, which include oil and gas, usually belong to the owner of the land. The owner can sell these rights to a resource development or resource extraction company, so in effect, there can be more than one owner of a piece of land. The surface can be owned by one individual, and the subsurface can be owned by someone else. Oil companies can buy the mineral rights to oil, and therefore can own the oil in the ground. However, even in the United States, more often than not, the oil companies lease the mineral rights. Offshore oil belongs either to the adjacent state or, beyond the state offshore boundaries, to the federal government. Oil companies, for the most part, do not own much oil. Many own no oil. On the oil they do own, they pay a royalty fee to the private owner or royalties and taxes to the government. These costs can range from 12% to as much as 90% of the value of the oil. In other countries, the government usually owns all the mineral resources, which may be leased to the developers. But government can change their mind about lease terms or cancel them with or without compensation. Quite a few have done so. Another severe hazard of the mineral resource business. Myth: oil companies make big profits compared with other enterprises. Reality: the profits of oil companies are frequent targets of criticism by politicians and the media. Many people believe that mineral resource companies are excessively profitable relative to other enterprises. As pointed out in Chapter 21 of Mineral Economics, the amount of capital that has to be invested in the production of oil or the extraction of oil is very large, and it takes a long time, in many cases many years, before any return can be realized on the investment, if indeed there is any return at all. Oil exploration and extraction is a high-risk venture. Companies that do survive, on average over the years, earn a relatively modest return on investment. On records kept since 1968, the average return on stockholder investment in 30 representative U.S. oil companies has been 12.5%. For 30 representative manufacturing companies, the return has been 13.1%. The average return for oil companies is less than the average return for the manufacturing industry in general. The industry has been subject to wide fluctuations in the price of oil. In 1999, it was as low as $10 a barrel. It traded above $147 a barrel in 2008, and then fell to below $40 a barrel. And as of this reading right now, in February 2016, it's back around $30 a barrel. To retain the highly trained staff necessary in the industry, the companies must have some capital reserve built up to ride out the downturns and wait for more prosperous times. Oil company earnings were high in years 2006 to 2008, but fell dramatically, as much as 70% in 2009, and are now in 2016 even lower than that. Based on the price of a gallon of gasoline we buy, the big winners in the gasoline price sweepstakes are the federal and state governments. They collect six times or more in taxes per gallon than the companies earn in profits. Oh, that's interesting. They collect six times or more in taxes per gallon than the companies earn in profits. Some of the larger increases in retail gas prices have been caused by state tax increases. The state of California not only has a gas tax, presumably for road maintenance, but it also levies a sales tax on the total price of gasoline, including all other taxes, so they level a tax on the other taxes paid as well as on the basic product. Some companies, for example, ExxonMobil, are starting to leave the retail gasoline market because it is not profitable for them. At the upper end of the profitable segments of the economy are the so-called sin stocks, the tobacco and liquor companies. It is ironic that companies that produce products that are harmful to the health and welfare of the country are much more profitable than the oil industry that produces a basic necessity that makes life far more pleasant than it would otherwise be without this important energy source. One of the main reasons for this difference in profitability between the petroleum industry and other segments of the economy is the huge capital investment and long lead time required for exploration and extraction before there is any profit. The average is 7 years. Offshore drilling platforms costing hundreds of millions of dollars are not required to make cigarettes. The oil industry involves high risks and huge investments. In contrast, the highly profitable tobacco industry does not incur large costs except for advertising. Myth: alternative energy sources can readily replace oil. Reality: this is the assumption made by many people who advocate alternative energy sources as an early solution to our dependence on imported oil and the perceived negative environmental effects of burning oil. The facts relative to this matter are mixed. Alternative energy sources may, in some cases, replace oil. But there is nothing in sight to replace the convenience of handling and the high energy density of oil in use for transport vehicles, especially air transport. And there's considerable doubt that alternative sources can readily replace oil in the volumes in which it is now used, about 85 million barrels a day. Going to another fuel source to equal the huge energy demand now met by convenient, easily transported, and high-density energy in oil will not be easy. At present, there is no comprehensive replacement for oil in sight. In some uses, there is no replacement for oil. Millions of miles of the world's roads are paved with billions of tons of asphalt, a mixture of crushed rock at the bottoms of oil refining operations, for which there is absolutely no real economic substitute. Roads cannot be paved with ethanol or hydrogen or cellulose. Technology may ultimately devise ways to replace oil in some uses, but when this happens, it will change the way society lives. Myth: the transition to a non-renewable energy economy will be easy. Reality: contrary to popular opinion, there are many reasons why such a transition will not be easy or simple, including the fact that solar and wind energy are not constant energy sources, and biofuels in significant volume would require very large amounts of land and water now devoted to food crops. Conversion to a solar and/or wind energy economy would involve vast construction projects to install huge collecting systems. houses and factories would have to be redesigned to much more energy efficient standards. Electricity is not a primary source of energy. It must be generated from other energy sources, such as coal-fired or nuclear-fueled power plants, gas turbines, water power, wind, solar cells, or by other methods. The amount of electricity needed to power the vehicles that now run on oil would be enormous. The problems of storing electricity are not yet satisfactorily solved. The battery disposal problem and the various methods by which large additional amounts of electricity would have to be generated lead to a third problem for using alternative energy sources, the matter of environmental impact. Alternatives to produce electricity are not necessarily environmentally friendly. Also, the electric car, as far as can be visualized with foreseeable technology, would not offer the same degree of mobility that gasoline-powered vehicles do. Editor's note, with Elon Musk, that seems to be changing. Myth. Ethanol reduces U.S. dependence on foreign oil. Reality. Promoting ethanol, alcohol, as an additive to partially replace gasoline is a happy hunting ground for politicians to get votes. Enthusiasm can reach astounding heights. The governor of Minnesota, a state strongly promoting ethanol production, said, quote, "We could be the Saudi Arabia of the Midwest," unquote. Ethanol combines winning the Corn Belt farm vote, a large bloc, with the public's hope that we can escape the clutches of foreign oil producers. The idea is that ethanol, made from corn, and therefore supporting the price of corn, can partially substitute for gasoline in the form of gasohol, which is 10 to 15% ethanol. In the 2004 presidential campaign, both major candidates endorsed increasing production of ethanol. It takes gasoline or diesel to run the machinery needed to plant, plow, fertilize, harvest, and transport the corn to the processing plant, further reducing the energy replacement value of ethanol for gasoline. Ethanol production is probably an energy negative when the full scope of the production cost is included. The environmental cost also must be considered. Corn is the hardest of all crops on soil fertility and in causing soil loss by erosion. Ethanol will do virtually nothing to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. It does, however, generate profit for ethanol producers. Myth. We have learned to extract limitless amounts of material from the depths of the earth. All the rest of the old scarcities are tumbling down the same steep slope toward unlimited supply at zero cost. That was a quote from a book by Huber, or H-U-B-E-R, 1999. Reality. On a finite earth, nothing is limitless, and it is impossible to obtain any resource at zero cost. Even so-called free solar and wind energy requires equipment to build and capture energy from these sources. In regards to the depths of the earth, mining at best can get down to only about a depth of about 10,000 feet because the geothermal gradient is about 2 degrees Fahrenheit for every 100 feet. That means the temperature at 10,000 feet down is about 200 degrees Fahrenheit higher than at the surface. Mines at that depth require expensive cooling systems. A lot of pumps are also needed to keep the water out that would otherwise flood the mine. A major hazard at greater depths is overlying rock pressure. It is so great that walls of the mine are subject to rock bursts, in which rock bursts out of the sides of the mine and crush anything in their path, including mining cars and people. Yet the article containing these absurd claims appeared in the respected Forbes magazine, December 22, 1999. Myth. Alternative energy sources are environmentally benign. Reality. Converting coal to some liquid form that could be used to fuel transportation is possible, but to replace oil in current use would involve the greatest mining endeavor the world has ever seen. It would require strip mining vast areas of Western land every year. If alternative energy considerations do not include coal, but rather are thought of in terms of solar energy, biomass, nuclear power, wind, hydropower, tidal, ocean thermal energy conversion, OTEC, or shale oil, they all also have environmental impacts. These were discussed in more detail in Chapter 20 on Mineral and Energy Development and the Environment. Solar energy collectors in large numbers, in numbers large enough to be significant in our energy sources, would occupy very large amounts of land. Mining the minerals, mining the materials to make these collectors would also have a huge impact. Because the collectors do not have an infinite life, there would be the continual problem of replacement, involving more mining operations. The environmental impact of using biomass as a major source of energy would be huge, especially in terms of the degradation of the highly important resource, soil. Biomass forms humus, a vital component in all healthy soils. Wind power devices are unsightly, noisy, kill birds, and, like solar collectors, deteriorate and have to be replaced with more materials mined from the earth. Both wind farms and solar farms need access roads to service the equipment and the motor vehicles to do it. In brief, there is no free lunch in the use of any alternative energy source with respect to the environment. All have an impact. Eventually, some or perhaps all of these sources will be used. The decisions involve which sources have the least environmental effects and cost, and yet can help meet projected energy demands. With an ever-increasing world population requiring more and more energy, any energy source or combination of sources that would meet this demand would inevitably have a huge environmental impact through the sheer size of the operations. This is recognized and referred to by some as the energy sprawl of the green economy. A further comment was, quote, "We are about to destroy the environment in the name of saving it. Renewable energy is not a free lunch. It is an unprecedented assault on the American landscape." That was from Alexander, 2009. Myth: biomass can be a major source of liquid fuels. Reality: this assertion is frequently made, but it has been thoroughly explored and proven to be a myth. A variety of plants, including greasewood in the arid southwest, sugar cane, sugar beets, trees in general, seaweed, and seeds, have all been cited as possible important sources of liquid fuel for the future. The Energy Research Advisory Board of the United States Department of Energy reported in 1981, U.S. population was then 258 million compared with 325 million now, that Americans used 40% more fossil energy than the total amount of solar energy captured each year by all U.S. plant life. Annually, available biomass is not a feasible replacement for the large storehouse of organic energy accumulated over millions of years in the form of coal and petroleum. Myth: there are billions of barrels of oil that can be readily recovered from oil shale in the United States. Reality: the United States has the world's largest and richest deposits of so-called oil shale, which I pointed out previously contain no oil. This is in contrast to the shale strata that have passed through the oil window temperature that converts kerogen to oil and are now being exploited by fracking. The great prospects for the production of oil from oil shale in the United States has been one of the most widely promoted and often repeated energy myths for many years. Statements made even by government agencies can be quite misleading. They may also be due to a less than careful examination of the facts, and perhaps to a bit of promotion for the agency involved. One such statement concluded, quote, that using demonstrated methods of extraction, recovery of about 80 billion barrels of oil from accessible high-grade deposits of the Green River Formation is possible at costs competitive with petroleum of comparable quality. Duncan, 1981. This is a clear misstatement of the facts. When this was written in 1981, there had been no demonstrated methods of oil recovery at costs competitive with oil or of comparable quality, nor have there been any such methods demonstrated to date. A variety of experimental processes have been tried. All have failed. Unocal, Exxon, Occidental Petroleum, Shell, and other companies have made substantial attempts, but with no commercial results to date. A state government agency issued a pamphlet about oil shale, saying, quote, The deposits are estimated to contain 562 billion barrels of recoverable oil. This is more than 64% of the world's total proven crude oil reserves. Unquote. State of Utah, 1990. The implication was that the oil was recoverable and could be produced at a net energy profit as if there were barrels of oil from a conventional well. The average citizen reading this statement in a government publication would be led to conclude that the United States really has no oil supply problem if oil shales hold recoverable oil equal to more than 64% of the world's total proven crude oil reserves. Presumably, the United States could tap into this great oil reserve at any time. This is simply not true. All attempts to extract this oil economically in significant quantities have failed. Furthermore, the quote-unquote oil, and it is not the same as oil as crude oil, but this is usually not reported, may be recoverable, but the energy recovered may not equal the energy input required to recover it. That is, the net energy may be negative. If oil is quote-unquote recovered, but at a net energy loss, the operation is a failure. Also, the environmental impacts of developing oil shale resources, especially related to the available water supply, the headwaters of the already overused Colorado River, and the disposal of wastes do not seem manageable at present, and perhaps not ever. The clear implication of both of these government statements is that oil shale is a huge, readily available resource. But despite the oil shale debacle in northern Colorado in the late 1980s and early 1990s, the myth lives on. Quote, huge untapped reserves of oil exist in oil shale deposits in the western United States, with a potential oil content exceeding that of all other petroleum resources in the entire world. Unquote. Taken from an oil shale investment promotional, 1995. Myth. Wind could significantly replace oil for fuel in U.S. electric power plants. Reality. Advocates of wind power frequently claim that wind-produced electric power can significantly substitute for oil in the U.S. electric power grid. An official of the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy in 2004 asserted that, quote, wind technology has already shown its worth. If long-armed windmills were driving electric utilities, there would be more oil for transportation, planes, trucks, and cars, unquote. It is true that there might be more oil available, but because less than 2% of U.S. electric power is currently generated from oil, it wouldn't be much. The chief fuels in electric power generation are coal, natural gas, hydropower, and oil, in that order. Other myths. Myth: science and technology can solve any resource problem. Reality. In brief, this is the popular idea that because of all the great technological and scientific advances and discoveries of the past, science and technology can solve all future resource problems. Alan Overton of the American Mining Congress reminded us, quote, the American people have forgotten one important fact. It takes stuff to make things, unquote. The basic problem is that even scientists cannot create something out of nothing. Minerals and fossil energy resources on which we are so dependent do not reproduce themselves. They do not grow. But human population does. There must be raw material with which to work. The idea that science will come to the rescue in some fashion is a popular public placebo. It is an observable fact that people other than scientists and technologists are frequently more confident of what these disciplines can do for the future than scientists and technologists themselves, the people who are aware of the basic facts about the availability of resources and what can be done to replace them. Technology alone cannot produce anything. Technology can provide access to resources previously unavailable, but it cannot create a barrel of oil or a pound of copper. In 1992, the United States National Academy of Sciences and the Royal Society of London together issued a warning that, quote, if current predictions of population growth prove accurate and patterns of human activity on the planet remain unchanged, science and technology may not be able to prevent either irreversible degradation of the environment or continued poverty for much of the world. I'm going to read that again. In 1992, the U.S. National Academy of Sciences and the Royal Society of London together issued a warning that, quote, if current predictions of population growth prove accurate and patterns of human activity on the planet remain unchanged, science and technology may not be able to prevent either irreversible degradation of the environment or continued poverty for much of the world, unquote. Ryerson, in 1995, commented on the concept of a technology fix with respect to population growth, states, quote, some of the more outlandish claims of the technology fix advocates, for example, that we could ship our excess people to other planets, have almost been forgotten. Imagine sending aloft 90 million people per year. Yet while extraterrestrial migration is no longer taken seriously by most people, many of the unsubstantiated claims of new technologies that will save the day are still seen by many as a reason not to worry about population growth, unquote. It is important to understand that a technology fix is not an answer to unrestrained population growth. It is a decision made by people, and they may or may not choose to use the technology, quote-unquote, of family planning. Myth. Because past predictions of resource and population problems have proved incorrect, future predictions will not come true. Therefore, there is no need to be concerned. Reality. Malthus, then and now. This view stems in part from past predictions of impending disasters that did not materialize as scheduled. Notable were those made by Malthus in 1798. The argument presented by those who apparently see no need to relate population to resources is that since Malthus' prediction of two centuries ago proved so wrong, why should similar predictions be taken seriously today? Malthus's predictions were wrong because he could not foresee the coming industrial and scientific revolution, including the Green Revolution. The Industrial Revolution provided much improved housing with adequate space heating, greatly improved sanitary facilities, and the machines and energy to run them. It provided the basis for supporting an enormously much expanded population. Huge resources not known to Malthus were discovered and developed. But in the long run, Malthus was clearly right. Unchecked population growth will outstrip food supply. That time may be near at hand. In 2008, world grain supplies stood at a 60-year low, and per capita cereal grain production was the lowest it had been in more than 50 years. It is still on a steep downward trend. See Figure 26.1. Ferguson further observes that, quote, for many decades, there has been a willful blindness to the recognition that population is the preeminent problem, unquote. In 1798, Malthus wrote, quote, population, when unchecked, increases in a geometrical ratio, but subsistence increases only in an arithmetical ratio, unquote. This is an early recognition of the importance of the exponential factor, which applies to many aspects of human existence and resource consumption. We are running out of more earth to explore and exploit. In Malthus's time, the entire world's mineral and energy resources were virtually undeveloped, and the means to exploit them did not exist. The situation is now reversing. The difference is the present peaking or declining energy and mineral production in many parts of the world, and an already huge and a continually expanding population. We live on a finite globe, and there are no more new continents to move to as one region becomes depleted. The globe has been encircled. Myth. There is an easy, painless solution to our energy problem. Reality. After one of more than 500 talks I have given on energy problems, especially on petroleum supply, the common question is, what's the answer? What the person is really asking is, how can we keep the current game going? There must be some alternative, and the question is sometimes bolstered by the thought that we can put men on the moon, we can solve the oil supply problem. Putting men on the moon was a neat technological trick designed to show the Russians that whatever they could do, Sputnik satellite and men in space first, we could do better. But that technology has only limited applications, not related to oil supply problems. The answer to the question, what's the answer, is that it is not going to be possible to keep the current game going. hugely dependent as we are on fossil fuels. When I say this, I sometimes add that if I did have the answer and could patent it within 5 years, I would be the world's richest man. When I tell the audience there is no simple solution, I generally do not get invited back. We all like simple, inexpensive answers to problems. The problem of replacing oil offers no easy or inexpensive solutions. Myth. At the current rate of consumption, reality. This is often used as a comforting phrase to assure the public that at the current rate of consumption, a given resource will last for an X number of years. Usually, this is quite a long time. The fallacy is that the current rate of consumption does not continue into the future. The rate of consumption almost always increases. The increase in resource consumption is due to three factors. 1. Population growth. 2. Demand for an increase in per capita consumption of resources to raise living standards. And 3. Discussing a large number of uses for a given resource. The assertion that a depletable resource will last for X number of years, quote, at the current rate of consumption, unquote, bears little relation to the reality of the actual life of the resource. A resource may have a life of 100 years at the current rate of consumption, but at a seemingly low rate of 5% annual increase in demand, the resource will only last about 36 years. Let me say that again. A resource may have a life of 100 years at the current rate of consumption, but at a seemingly low rate of a 5% annual increase in demand, the resource will only last about 36 years. One example of such a statement regarding world oil reserves was made on a popular TV investment program, Wall Street Week, 1996. It was that current supplies were enough to last us for 40 years, quote, at current rates of consumption, unquote. This statement is misleading for two reasons. First, current consumption rates are transitory. Demand for oil will continue to increase as population increases. Second, if the statement were taken literally, it would mean that for 40 years, we would have the same amount of oil available as we have today. But in the 41st year, there would be none. This also has no relation to reality. The graphic representation of the production of a finite resource, such as oil, is never a flat line. In broad form, after smoothing out irregularities caused by political, economic, and technological events, the production or extraction tends toward a bell-shaped curve, figure 9.9. The critical point is when world oil production begins to decline, not when the last drop of oil is pumped from the ground. Myth. There is some undiscovered energy source that will eventually be found that will save us. Reality. The energy spectrum from fusion, sun, to wood has been thoroughly studied, with no indication that there is any undiscovered energy source. The popular hope that, quote, scientists will think of something, has no basis in fact. Myth. One mineral or metal can freely and equally replace another. Reality. As we enter the age of depleting resources, both in quality and quantity, there is a view that one metal can freely and equally replace another. This is a carryover of ancient attempts at alchemy, the classic effort to change lead into gold. But the myth persists. The late economist Julian Simon carried it to the extreme when he said, quote, copper can be made from other metals, unquote. In long-distance electrical transmission lines, aluminum is now being used instead of copper because aluminum is cheaper and lighter weight. In making this substitution, some efficiency is lost because aluminum does not transmit electricity as efficiently as copper does. Each metal has its own distinct physical and chemical properties. Molybdenum, what I've been calling Molly D in this book, editor's note, makes steel tough so that it can be rolled out in sheets and not crack. But with the alloy, Moly D does not replace steel. It simply adds a quality to it. Similarly, with nonmetals, every living cell has to have potassium and phosphorus for which there are no substitutes. Indeed, when one substance does substitute for another in a body, it is typically a poison or a toxin. There's no genuine substitute for oil in many of its uses. As we face the depletion of Earth's resources, there may be limited substitutes for some minerals, but each resource has qualities not found in any other. Myth: solar and wind energy are free. Reality: although it is true sunshine and wind arrive at no cost, converting them into useful energy is not free. There is an energy cost incurred in manufacturing the equipment needed to capture them. The equipment wears out and suffers weather damage, and from time to time needs to be replaced. Wind and solar installation also need to be serviced, which means construction of roads and the manufacture of equipment to service the facilities. Building roads and service equipment takes energy, which must be subtracted from energy recovered to determine the true net energy recovery of these quote-unquote free energy sources. A free lunch will never arrive in securing energy supplies. Myth: we can eventually create a completely renewable, recyclable economy. Reality: this is the happy nirvana, which many dedicated environmentalists and others visualize reaching. Oh, that it could be achieved! Very early primitive societies came and went using virtually no earth resources. Even the rock thrown at small game was recyclable. But theirs was a standard of living we would not want to accept now. To sustain any reasonable standard of living, a completely renewable, recyclable economy is a myth. As much a myth as that other will-o'-the-wisp, the perpetual motion machine. People would want electricity, electric lights, for example. The metal and glass in a light bulb must be mined. So must the metal in power lines needed to transmit electricity to homes, businesses, and the local hospital. How does one recycle a light bulb? The problem can be pursued in numerous other aspects of daily life. The best we can do is to use as little of the Earth's non-renewable resources as possible and make them last a very long time. Promotion of myths. The media, newspapers, magazines, television, internet, radio, report the news. But in their competitive haste to do so, they sometimes become an accessory to spreading misinformation. Assertions made by uninformed people, politicians pursuing votes, unscrupulous promoters, or citizen groups trying to further a particular point of view may ignore realities. Too often, these statements are picked up by the media and reported as fact. For the sake of human survival at a reasonable standard of living, myths must be replaced by reality on which intelligent decisions can be made. It is distressing to see that in many instances the general public cannot differentiate between what might be in the realm of possibility and the absurd of utterly impossible. If society is to survive, reason and clear recognition of reality must prevail, with policy and actions made on that basis. Part of the public education should be directed toward truly analytical thinking. Political leadership especially must correctly state and differentiate between the possible and the absurd, even when the facts are not happy facts. This is particularly important when it comes to decisions about the basic needs of civilization, the energy and mineral resources upon which so much depends. Conclusions. It has been said that, quote, optimists have more fun in life, but pessimists may be right, unquote. The late Congresswoman Claire Booth Luce from Connecticut said, quote, the difference between optimists and pessimists is that the pessimists are better informed, unquote. Scientists are frequently labeled as pessimists because, in applying reality, many things they report are not all that cheerful. Unfortunately, factual current information about the environment and energy resource availability is not particularly encouraging, and that is a fact. Why not call such people realists instead of pessimists? People discount pessimists, but they would perhaps listen a little bit more to people called realists. Unfortunately, the general public only likes good news, true or not. Hardin has aptly noted, quote, if the reception of the Limits to Growth and Global 2000 report taught us nothing else, it should have taught us that the Greeks were right. In the public relations game, only optimism sells, unquote. Hardin, 1993, quotes Tiresias in Euripides' The Phoenician Woman, quote, a man's a fool to use the prophet's trade, for if he happens to bring bitter news, he's hated by the man for whom he works, unquote. Hardin might well have further noted that in political elections, which are the quintessence of the public relations game, the same applies. Who likes to read a magazine or journal with ominous statements? Cheerful news sells, and editors are always glad to use it. Frequently, people with little or no background in a subject write such articles. One example was the pairing of an economist and a director of Asian studies who collaborated to write an article with these statements. Quote, "But contrary to much perceived wisdom, the energy problem looming in the 21st century is neither skyrocketing prices nor shortages that herald the beginning of the end of the age of oil. Instead, the danger is precisely the opposite. Long-term trends point to a prolonged oil surplus and low oil prices over the next two decades. The world's problem is not scarcity, but glut." Jaffe and Manning, 2000. They take to task a geologist of long experience who holds the opposite view. At the time the article was written, oil cost about $25 a barrel. Within 5 years, oil was trading above $58 a barrel, and in 2008, briefly, over $147 a barrel. A prolonged oil surplus and low oil prices over the next two decades earn its place with other myths. The lesson from this example is to consider the professional background and experience of the source of scientific and technical statements. Respect the view with the best credentials. Long industry experience is far better than people from outside the subject field who decide to write an article. Regardless of the popularity of optimism over realism, the wisest route for humanity would be the one that plans and bases decisions on today's scientific and technological realities and reasonably visible resources, rather than hoping for things that might never arrive. Optimism is vital in looking toward the future. One must be optimistic to have a basis for making an effort, but optimism should be tempered with facts. Campaigns for public office should not give citizens false hopes. As civilization proceeds, it will be much more convenient and far less disruptive to be pleasantly surprised along the way than unpleasantly surprised. Myths must be replaced by reality, on which intelligent decisions are made. And he concludes with a quote from Aldous Huxley, "Facts do not cease to exist because they are ignored."